It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you for joining us. Each of you, you're treasured, you're valued, you have purpose. Today, strive for excellence, live with intention, take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. I so appreciate you joining us. And thank you to this team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Happy Thursday to you, producer Steve.
Happy Thursday, one day away.
Yes, one of your favorite days of the week, and that is Friday, because you love your weekends. I think a lot of people love their weekends. And so there's a lot going on out there, though. We strive to look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom, and bring truth and clarity to these issues so that you can engage in this battle of ideas that is raging in our state and in our country today. And we need to be able to talk with our neighbors and our friends and our family about these important issues. And that is our hope, is that we are helping you get your brain around these issues so that you can talk with them and engage in this battle of ideas that's going on. And we look at this through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And force comes about in many different ways. It used to be with a weapon. The bad guys would ride into the town or the village. They'd use their weapon. They'd take the stuff. They'd take the women, the children, whatever, and they used a weapon. But now the new ways of force are a little bit different. And that could be policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, or what we're seeing the latest is coercion. And remember, it's never compassionate to take other people's stuff via force. And if something is a good idea, you should not need force to implement it. And the American idea was founded on this great idea of liberty, and that is the responsible exercise of freedom. And it is something worth protecting, and it is something that is, there's an assault on liberty today, and that is why we need to understand what's going on and get our brains around these issues. Gee, so that is why we do the show.
Kim, you're sounding just like that guy in the White House. He made quite a splash yesterday when he landed in England or Great Britain, and in his comments to the American military at the Air Force Base, it sounded a lot like what you just said.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't, you know what, I ended up with a very busy day, and I'm not paying so much attention to what he's saying these days either. So
it was a surprise, because yeah, that's not the jargon that usually comes out of his mouth. It was hilarious. I wish I would have maybe recorded the sound bites. And the funny thing, in there's a pattern evolving here. When he goes out places, Jill is the one who speaks first, kind of like warm up the crowd. And at one point, she caught him looking in another direction. She said, "Pay attention, Joe." And then shortly after that, he got up and his first words out is this: "I forget I'm the president." So that's, and that got quite a laugh. But then he went on to talk, and he actually said a lot of the things that you just said about the American idea.
Yeah, they're very good. They're very good at saying the things that people really believe in and that they want to hear many times. But when you look at the policies that is being put forth by this Harris, Biden, Obama, Rice administration, it is anything but liberty loving.
Why is that list growing?
It is growing. It's a presidency by committee right now.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it's supposed to be. So I do appreciate, again, you guys all joining us. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson. MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who are contributing to keep our independent voice on the air. as we look at these issues. And my other show, America's Veteran Stories, which airs Sundays 3 to 4 p.m. and then they rebroadcast at 10 to 11 p.m. on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7 FM. This week's show is our interview with George Norton. And he is a World War II veteran. He served during the Korean War and also a Vietnam veteran, and really a fascinating story. He grew up on the plains of Kansas during the Dirty 30s. And so we also got just a bit of history about what that was like. I think people don't remember, they don't understand that. And so it's a very interesting interview. I would recommend that people certainly tune that in on Sunday. It's a very good good lesson in history, Steve.
I wonder, and it probably comes through in the interview, after all the war that this guy experienced, when he finally ceased to be active duty status, what he thought of human nature and you know, his role in these different conflicts.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating. I would just really recommend that people tune in. He was not involved in combat. He was involved in the commissary services eventually. I say he was initially involved in combat because he was a gunnery officer. And his experience on some of those big guns and actually an experience with a kamikaze pilot. So, yes, that was combat. But then during his career, it was more support services. And so it's really a fascinating interview. I'd recommend that people check in on that. But let's jump over here to our quote for the day. I was not familiar with this gentleman, Will Durant. And he was an American writer, a historian, a philosopher. And he became best known for his work, The Story of Civilization, 11 volumes written in collaboration with his wife, Ariel Durant. And it was published between 1935 and 1975. I mean, talk about a body of work. He was born in 1885. He died in 1981. And this is what he said. A great civilization is not conquered from without until it has destroyed itself from within. The essential causes of Rome's decline lay in her people, her morals, her class struggle, her failing trade, her bureaucratic despotism, her stifling taxes, and her consuming wars. There is a lot of that going on right now in America, Steve.
You know, there is. And the first thing that came to my mind when I read that is the, you know, it has several flavors of it, but it eventually says, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And that phrase is attributed to a couple different people. I tried to sort it out to see who actually was the first one to come out with that phrase. And it goes back to a George Santayana, who was a professor of philosophy at Harvard. But there it is. I mean, look at that quote and think about what's going on here and now. And to the people who don't have a clue, where we have seen this before in other millennia, and it's happening again, and we don't see it. We don't put any real sense of significance to it, and we're just going to, you know, say, well, yeah, this stuff happens, and we're setting ourselves up for a big fall.
Well, we are, and there's a big fight going on in the Republican Party right now. And I think that they try to couch it as those who support Trump, those who support Trump's policies, and then those establishment Republicans that really have been, they want it to go back to the way it used to be. The cocktail parties in Washington, D.C., where they got big consulting contracts and not really talk about the American idea, the fabric of our country. And we are seeing that there is this group, Paul Ryan, when he was out at the Reagan Library, Peggy Noonan, when they were giving these speeches on A Time for Choosing, they basically say we should only focus on the economy. But if the fabric underneath that economy is not one that's built on these principles of the American idea that all men are created equal, first of all, and that every individual has these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. If we don't work to protect that big idea, and think that it's just going to be the economy that's going to win elections, I think that we are kidding ourselves, because I think that we will lose this American idea if we don't understand that. Trump, and I know that there are many people that say they just so disliked his personality. I personally found him funny because I used to go back to New York all the time, and I appreciate New Yorkers. I think he was a New Yorker, a construction guy, and early on there were some things that it's like, oh, I really wish you would not have said that. But he continued, I think, to grow into understanding the American idea, and the policies that he put in place helped everyday hardworking people. And you look at what is happening down at the border. First of all, there is nothing compassionate about bringing these children into America, and we don't know what is happening to them. These coyotes, we don't know what's happened to them on the trip up, and there's nothing compassionate about that. This is an intention to flood our country, make us pay for all of these illegal immigrants that are coming in. They're not, you know, immigration, when we talk about we're a nation of immigrants, it wasn't in the great migrations that came in during the 1800s, early 1900s. It was not people coming here for free stuff. It was people that were coming here for freedom, and they were coming here for the opportunity of their pursuit of happiness. And to be bringing in hundreds of thousands of people and then paying for health care and housing and food by taxing other people, and also the security issues, there is something that is inherently wrong about that, Steve.
Well, you know it. I know it. Some of the people who are most upset about illegal immigration are those who came here legally. They're the most vocal speaking out against what's going on at the border right now. And you know, I get it. That's the way it should be.
Well, that's for sure. Illegal immigration. And then this whole taxation, this excessive and unpredictable taxation. And Patty has it here on the outline. So, of course, the solution that the radical activist, regressive people that have taken over the Democrat Party is that they are going to basically unleash, and this is something that is in the Declaration of Independence, is they sent, King George sent swarms of people to enforce excessive taxation of writing things. And that's exactly what we're seeing with what Elizabeth Warren is proposing. And let me see. It says Elizabeth Warren's plan to close the tax gap, if you will. It just doesn't add up. Elizabeth Warren, she's a senator, says her plan to more than double the annual IRS budget would allow the federal government to collect, she says, an extra $1.75 trillion over the next 10 years. Of course, that doesn't even come close to what all the spending is that they're proposing. But that windfall of new revenue, and they assume that everything stays static, is generated by beefing up IRS enforcement and giving the federal tax cops more authority to snoop through Americans' financial records and even their bank statements, looking for targets to audit. And hopefully that's not going to happen. But to release swarms of IRS agents onto everyday hardworking people is it's totally antithetical to the American idea. To say that they're going to swarm people's bank accounts, and you know that they're going to target people politically because that's what they do. There is something that is very wrong about that, taxing people that have taken risk and hard work. Everybody agrees, I think, that there is a percentage of taxes that we pay for our security, variety of things like that. But it should be very limited. And this is very dangerous under this administration. We saw it under the Obama administration, using the government to target people and to take more and more of their stuff, because people have come to believe that government is the answer instead of us ourselves as the answer. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. Segments 3 and 4, we'll have a conversation with Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler. I want to get his read on new developments regarding COVID-19, the Wuhan, China virus. Also, the new developments, eventually the truth does come out. And that is the purpose of the press, is to be searching for truth and clarity and bring that out. But we're starting to see some very interesting things happen regarding Dr. Anthony Fauci. Before we go to break, though, last night the girls were over, and I ordered Hooters wings, those great smoked wings, and they're always a hit. The Avalanche, they play tonight. Hopefully they're down one game and they've got to win tonight so that they continue on in the NHL playoffs. But Hooters Restaurants is a great place to get together with friends. Wings is really their, you know, they're what they're famous for, but they have a whole variety of different specials. You can go to that. You can find that at my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. They have Kids Eat Free on Saturdays, happy hour specials. Great place to get together with friends to watch the game. And so be sure and check that out. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue headlines, and then we'll talk with Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler in segments 3 and 4. Stay tuned.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. The next headline that I want to go to is this one from Forbes, and it says the richest Americans, including Bezos, Musk, and Buffett, paid federal income taxes equaling just 3.4% of $401 billion in new wealth, a bombshell report shows. And it starts with issues of wealth inequality and tax avoidance by the ultra-rich front and center in Washington. A new analysis from ProPublica, of which they found 15 years of leaked confidential individual tax data. That's scary. And it shows that the wealthiest Americans pay very little, or in some cases, nothing in federal income tax. I think we do need to look a little further into that headline, because Patty and I were talking about it yesterday. And it says that ProPublica found that while the median American household earning roughly 70% per year paid 14% in federal taxes each year. The 25 richest Americans, by Forbes tally, paid a true tax rate of just 3.4% on wealth growth of $401 billion between 2014 and 2018. The first thing to understand is I don't think that they are comparing apples to oranges. Because we're talking about, first of all, income tax, and that's the tax on income. And that 14% rate on $70,000 is probably, that's probably right, you know, correct right now. Realize, though, that this, those people in Washington are raising the taxes on the $70,000 earner significantly. And then also we see the quiet thief of inflation, which hurts the person making $70,000. And then you go over to states like Colorado, which they're putting rules, regulations, they're trying to change the tax code so that they take more of that $70,000 as well. We need to be reducing taxes. We need to be reducing regulations and rules so that these people have more money in their pocket. During the Trump administration, everyday hardworking people, those families, had actually about $10,000 more in their pocket. And that was real growth in their income. And that is where we need to go. But this article is a bit on, again, the politics of envy. I mean, the fact that Bezos and Musk and Buffett have been very successful, I love that. However, we also see that they have used big government and big business like each other so that they, you know, may not like Musk. So many people think he's such a great entrepreneur, and he is, except he got over, I think, $3 billion in money from the government. Well, I don't really think that that's the proper role of government to be picking winners and losers. But let's say, as people, the argument that they're coming in now is that there was wealth creation and that they need to be paying a tax on wealth creation. Well, many times that wealth creation is not realized until something is sold. And so if they're starting to make the argument here that these guys didn't pay income tax on wealth creation, that's a dangerous thing for everyday hardworking people. So let's say that you have wealth creation in your IRA or your 401k. You could start to see that this narrative would say that they need to start to tax that as well. But if you take risk and you lose money, I'm not sure that then the IRS is going to reimburse you for those losses. And it's really been those out on the edge, the wealth, the job creators, those that have taken risk, that have created jobs, which in they have paid millions and millions of dollars in payroll taxes. So I think that we need to look a little further into this particular headline, because if they're starting to make the case to tax on wealth creation, that is really going to stifle creativity and innovation in America. Steve, am I making any sense on this?
You are, and I'm, you know, go back to how you started the top of the show about, you know, it used to be the force was a weapon, and now it's gone to these other modes. I don't have a good sound definition in my mind of the words strategic versus tactical. You know, and you think with all the military things that we do or we touch on, I would have that down by now. But the tactics that are used here in supplementing or to bring about this ideology, and at the very top of this discussion, at the pinnacle, is the fact that it's an ideology. You know, Trump, he went the other direction, and now we're forced to basically tear all that down and go back the other way in pushing this ideology of that is really harmful to the economy. It's harmful to the individual, you know, to the middle class working people. So, yes, you're making total sense.
Well, and I think we have to be really careful whenever we start to see the words. Well, when we see, you know, tax the rich, soak the rich, that is really politics of envy. And the American idea is you look at somebody that's been successful and you're like, that is great. If they can do it, I can do it. But government needs to get out of the way. And let's say that somebody, you know, one of the ways that there's a wealth inequality or is that one person may work 60 hours a week and another person may work, they may choose to have a job that's 40 hours a week. That's fine. People can have those choices on how the lifestyle that they want to have. But if the person that's out there that is working extra hours, taking risk and becomes successful, it's not fair to tax them more than somebody else so that then they equalize everything. And that is what this narrative really is out there. And it's all under this guise that government is the answer. The government is what, you know, is the answer to take care of people, to help them succeed. And we actually had a quote the other day right here in Colorado from one of our Republican elected representatives where they were talking about we don't want taxes to grow more than what the government needs. And it's like, wait a minute, what does the government need, right?
You love open-ended statements like that. But hey, cut to the chase here. The woman that whose name you mentioned, the senator, Elizabeth Warren, let's not forget her dirty little secret that she's quite well off. I mean, who gets paid 400 grand to teach a semester at, was it Harvard or Yale? You know, she's just dripping with money. And yet, these types of, you know, these ideas are springing up from her left and right. And, you know, she's just like an endless book. She just goes on and on and on.
Well, on that point, because the mantra of this is free college. If she really believed in free college, she should have taught that class for free, right?
Oh, that's not, well, no, that is fair. Yeah, that's good.
Okay, there's a couple of other headlines.
Oh.
The guys over at the Daily Wire. Oh, did you have something?
Well, I want to take it's not comedic value, but this, and I don't want to take away from the rest of the show for what you and Dr. Weiler are going to talk about, but this joints for jabs. This, you know, more coercion, but yet wrapped in something that's, you know.
Right. So in Washington State.
Yeah.
So we're seeing all of these lotteries to get the jab. Colorado has this lottery. I think they're calling it a drawing because lotteries, there's actually a whole bunch of different rules that you have to go through to have a lottery. But of course, the state doesn't have to do that. So there is Colorado is giving five different $1 million prizes, if you will, for people that have gotten the jab. We saw out in Mesa County, they're giving, I think, $5,000 to people that win that drawing. Mesa State University, right here in Colorado, they are, let's see, I can't remember exactly what it is they're doing, but they're using coercion to get students to take the jab. And then, as you mentioned, I think it's Washington State,
yes,
that they're giving joints for jabs, marijuana joints for people that get the jab. One has to say, wonder, why is there, if this is so effective, you should be able to make the case to the American people that this is why you should take the jab. And if people choose to do so, great. If people choose not to do so, great. But when we look at all this coercion, it's a big red flag to me, Steve.
Well, it just, again, the coercion is wrapped to be something attractive. It's like, you know, what's that? Oh, well, never mind. I'm getting all tongue-tied here. But, you know, it's so obvious to see what they're doing.
It is really obvious. And again, if something is a good idea, you should not have to use force or coercion to get people to do that. But we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I want to talk with Dr. James Lyons-Weiler. He's a scientist, and he is he's with the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. And I want to talk to him. There's been a lot of developments since we talked with him last month regarding the COVID-19 vaccine. And realize that it's an experimental drug. It's not been approved by the FDA. And, of course, all this new information regarding Dr. Fauci. And so wanted to find out what Jack has to say about that. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thrilled to have on the line with me Dr. James Lyons-Weiler. He is a scientist with the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge, and he has really been watching what's happened with COVID-19, the Wuhan, China virus, the vaccines, which is there. It's not FDA approved. It's an experimental drug. But there's a lot of new developments since we talked with him last month. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kim. It's nice to talk to you again.
There's a lot that I want to ask you about, but there's, first of all, what's the update that you would like to give our listeners regarding the vaccine? What are you seeing going on with that?
Well, what I see is frank denial of science across the board. There was a long-standing veteran scientist affiliated with the CDC and HHS, Tim Shimabukuro, who reported to ACIP last month that he could find no serious adverse events and no deaths associated with COVID-19 using something called the vaccine science, the vaccine safety data link, the VSD. This is CDC's go-to study when they, because it's captured and controlled, the public can't access these data. And in the meantime, the premier biomedical research journal, The Lancet, had already published that Bell's palsy is probably associated, most likely associated with the vaccine. And we see report after report of thrombosis. We, you know, see the reports of people getting myocarditis and you know, anaphylaxis. And so there's a whole spate of adverse events, and yet somehow Dr. Shimabukuro managed to tell ACIP, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, that there are no, zero, as in goose egg, associations with any adverse events whatsoever that are serious and no deaths. So this is called vaccine risk and injury denialism. It's in the DNA of the HHS. It's in the DNA of the captured a regulatory body that ACIP is supposed to be. Every member on the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices, except for the military guy who has to show up and make sure that our national security interests are represented, has financial ties to pharmaceutical companies that make vaccines. And the way that the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices works is they try to find new markets to open. This is their MO. They will vote to approve each other's vaccines. So if I have an affiliation with Merck, I should be in competition with Pfizer, but I'll approve Pfizer's vaccine because it will open the market so that my vaccine, which has not yet gone through, you know, studies, will then be able to come on the market. This is collusion out in the open. This is, you know, akin to price fixing. This is a monopoly, a grand monopoly by pharmaceutical companies, and it's supposed to be a regulatory body. It's not supposed to be, you know, representative of the corporation's interests, but it should be representative of the people's interests. These, you know, government's supposed to protect us from harm, not make new market opportunities for pharma. So taxpayer dollars are being spent to hold these meetings. They're open meetings. They started taking public comment, and they oftentimes will approve of vaccines without any discussion of safety. And after the vote, then there will be then they will allow questions of safety and risk. So that's what I've been thinking about lately is, you know, that because we have regulatory capture that's complete in vaccines, what else is going on? Well, the FDA just approved of a drug for Alzheimer's after consulting a panel, which they're required to do by law. And this specific drug was a new drug for Alzheimer's. And two members of the committee that said, hey, this committee looked at the science, looked at all the studies that were available for this new drug, and they found no evidence that this drug works, no evidence of efficacy. The FDA went ahead and approved of the drug anyway, and now two members of the committee resigned. Now, there's no chance whatsoever that an ACIP committee member is going to resign. Their job is to be there to represent their pharmaceutical company. So we do not have a viable vaccine safety science paradigm inherent in the what they're calling science in the HHS, they're calling science in the CDC. what we have is a cabal that, you know, hosts these theatrical discussions. Everyone votes yes almost every time for every vaccine, and they never, ever take a vaccine off the market. So we do not have, vaccines are not regulated properly in the United States, and there's no oversight.
Well, and Jack, so we can see this. I was kind of late to the party regarding, and this was pre-COVID-19, regarding the public policy on vaccines. And I'd had a mom that had reached out to me regarding legislation here in Colorado a few years ago. And I had my kids vaccinated. I certainly, polio, I thought was an important vaccine, and basically eradicated polio. I thought that was really important. And when I read the legislation, though, and I saw that it was giving unelected bureaucrats the power to basically force what we would put into our bodies, and it might be something that at the time had not even been invented yet, and that, again, that was pre-COVID, I saw big danger in that kind of public policy, that kind of legislation. And I have come to the determination that the radical activist regressive left that has taken over the Democrat Party has really been playing long ball on many of these things, because we saw this vaccine legislation before COVID-19, but it seemed to me that it was playing right into what happened with the public policy on this virus once we found out about it. And what's your thoughts on that, Jack?
Well, listen, if it's going to lead to profit for pharmaceutical companies, and the pharmaceutical companies then donate to, elected representatives in their campaign, then it's a go. That's what determines the green light, not the vaccine safety science. There's never any real consideration. So when we see somebody like, Dr. Shima Bakuro specifically stating a big goose egg zero, and all the evidence is to the contrary. All the evidence is to the contrary. This has to shake medical professionals to the core. Because just like you, I had confidence in vaccines. Both of my sons, who are now young adult men, fully vaccinated per the vaccine schedule. The only difference is that their mom and I decided to space them out over an abundance of caution. Right. But yeah, we had faith and confidence in vaccines, and we thought that they were, healthy for them and a good idea. Subsequent to that, digging into the research, it's in reality things like the MMR. Well, the MMR hasn't been updated since it was invented in 1960. So we're still using a 1960s virus strain in the vaccine. And the measles, mumps, and rubella organisms all have evolved away from that vaccine. So we're being sold a bill of goods, is the simplest way to put it. Vaccine safety science is called vaccine safety science, not risk science. And, people who work in that area for or around the HHS are not allowed to use the word risk. They when they look at the databases, they're searching for vaccine safety signals. They're not looking for signals of vaccine risk. They even call anything that they call a risk, they call it a safety signal. So they're 100% biased towards not finding adverse events and deaths from vaccines, not just for COVID-19, not just for the latest vaccine.
Well, and you mentioned that this scientist said that there was zero risk. Well, that's statistically impossible. There's just no way that there can be a goose egg on that. Reasonable people would realize that that's just not possible. And one other thing, I'm going to date myself now, but I as a kid had measles and mumps and chicken pox. I did not have the vaccines for those. I actually had the diseases and survived that. But again, I thought vaccinations were a good idea. And I think that many times they are. But what I'm so concerned about is the public policy coercion. And then we're seeing so much coercion right now, Jack, out here in Colorado. We are spending taxpayer dollars. They are having a lottery, and they are giving away $1 million to five different people in a drawing of people that have gotten the jab. And Mesa County out here in Colorado, they're giving away a total of $90,000. We're seeing, Joints for Jab, the jab up in Washington State. All of this coercion is a big red flag to me, Jack.
Yeah. Well, coercion is specifically disallowed. Incentives and coercion are specifically disallowed in human subject research. And these are definitely experimental vaccines. They are not FDA approved. They're being used under emergency use authorization. So the idea of mandating or coercing or incentivizing with free beer or free fishing licenses in Minnesota or whatever it is that they think will get people to do it. You know, Senator Richard Pan and Governor Newsom out in California held a lottery. If you get a vaccine, you get an entry in a lottery. You can win millions of dollars. Okay, so this is actually illegal under the Code of Federal Regulations that governs human subjects research. It's not just that it feels unethical, it is unethical. When Andrew Wakefield was accused of being unethical in the way that he conducted his pilot study just to try to get some biological samples, he pulled the families together in at a birthday party, and he, for every patient that every child that allowed a blood test, because they were trying to find about why these kids had such serious GI problems after the MMR. It wasn't about autism, it was gastrointestinal disorders. Now the kids also had autism, but he offered them the equivalent of $5 US dollars, and he was skewered alive for offering incentives just for a blood draw from a child. There was no risk to these children for a blood draw. The risk, the vaccination event is a permanent biological event in your body. It permanently alters your immune system. Taking a kid's blood draw just to see if there's any biomarkers or inflammation or whatever he was looking for, that is harmless. There's virtually no risk whatsoever if you know what you're doing. So he had a phlebotomist there, and of course there was sanitary and everything. But the point is that we have unethical biomedical science run amok across the United States. Every person that's ever been vaccinated in the United States should have been told that this is an experimental vaccine. And I don't just mean COVID-19. The way that vaccine safety science is done is they do very short-term randomized clinical trials, and they look for efficacy, and then they leave the long-term safety to post-market surveillance. So the data goes into a database, and they will cook the data and analyze it 20 different ways until they find that there's no association. So we don't even have to go into the details. Like you said, Dr. Shimabukuro found no adverse events that are statistically associated. They want to be able to say that all these things are thrombocytopenia, but I'll tell you what, the American public's waking up. You can't get the same spectrum of specific adverse events, which I predicted in April, by the way, because of my bioinformatics analysis of the proteins. You can't get it in all 50 states and say that it's a coincidence. There can't be a 50 geographic coincidences, and these are happening across the United States, the same exact adverse events. So for ACIP, I think the entire ACIP committee should be held to the same standard that other governments have been held to. And when the Japanese government started to work with the companies that dumped all the mercury in the Minamata Bay, the public held the Japanese government to account. Then they were shamed into resignation. These people resigned out of shame. Just the horror of allowing people to continue to be exposed to knowing harm without the informed consent that's required by U.S. law. Shame on ACIP, and shame on Dr. Shimabukuro, and shame on Dr. Senator Pan, and shame on Governor Newsom, and shame on anyone who's trying to mandate or coerce another human being into permanently changing the biology of their body over a virus that most people have no symptoms for, and most people will enjoy superior immunity if they're infected. By far more, over 99% of people will survive this infection. And shame on those people who have denied early treatment, including Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci is specifically responsible, in my view, for hundreds of thousands of deaths by denying that hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other early treatments work, when that's what the science so robustly and strongly support. And how dare he come out just recently, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and say that anybody that's criticizing him is criticizing science, as if he is science incarnate. He is not science incarnate. He is a bureaucrat. The last time that he saw a patient, no one remembers the last time he actually was a practicing physician. I don't even know if he has a medical license. Okay, so here he is telling everybody that he is science. That's like a Ministry of Truth position, okay? I'm a scientist, but I would never say that somebody that's criticizing me is criticizing science writ large. Now, they may be denying the scientific evidence that I'm bringing forward, but he's flip-flopped all over the board on every issue, saying that what he's saying is founded in science. Well, if it's founded in science on Wednesday and he's saying the opposite on Thursday, what science is he talking about? You know, there's this vaccine is first in man. And the problem with finding adverse events in a product that is first in man with the very first studies is it's impossible to assess causality of adverse events from the COVID-19 vaccine in the initial clinical trials. And yet that's exactly what Moderna and Pfizer and the others did. They paid medical physicians to offer their medical opinion that, no, yeah, this thrombocytopenia occurred, or this stroke occurred, or these other events occurred, but they weren't due to the vaccine. They have no prior scientific evidence whatsoever to make that assessment. It should not be allowed. It should be illegal to rule out adverse events in the first-in-man trials. They should be reported. Causality should be a maybe, and then the larger clinical trials should be looked to confirm. Instead,
well, and Jack, yeah, and to that, I mean, and you mentioned it, informed consent. We need to take a break. I'm talking with Dr. Jack Lyons-Weiler. He is a scientist with the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. And when we come back, you mentioned Dr. Fauci, and he's in a bit of hot water right now regarding some of these emails. And I'd like to get your comments on that. Before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool is a family-owned business. They are located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And they have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. And they do every day, all day long, they offer a discount to our veterans, our military, our first responders. Father's Day is right around the corner. And Castlegate Knife and Tool is a great place to do your Father's Day shopping. So whether or not your father is a chef or a sportsman or a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place to go. Their website is castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Dr. James Lyons-Weiler. Stay tuned.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to keep our independent voice on the air as we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. On the line with me is Dr. James Lyons-Weiler. He is a scientist with the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. And Jack, what you've just described is very concerning. I know so many people that have gotten the COVID-19 vaccine, and they feel comfort in that. They have listened to mainstream media on this. So the first question, what would you say to people that have gotten the vaccine? And because so many of the people that I care about have done so.
Well, for people that have gotten the vaccine, in April, I published a study that introduced the phrase pathogenic priming. Pathogenic priming is when you've been exposed to pathogenic proteins or pathogenic parts of proteins. And now we know the spike protein itself is capable of causing harm to the human body. So the spike protein that's in the Moderna vaccine, it matches the native or the wild type protein that was in the original virus that came out of Wuhan, China. The concern is repeat exposure to the exact same original protein that could possibly cause autoimmunity, or part of the protein that could cause autoimmunity, because that's what you were exposed to before. So in thinking it through, the concern was, well, this concern exists if you're infected or if you're injected. However, we now know that the human immune response to the spike protein only mounts a very large immune response compared to the mild immune response that many people get when they have an infection. The other thing that we know is that if you get an infection, you can mount as many as 40 different possible antibodies that are there waiting for, you know, the virus in the future. You get a diversity of memory B and T cells. So you have a broader repertoire, more, you know, options in your arsenal than just against the spike protein. And so you're probably better protected, and that's what the data are showing now. You have superior, longer-lasting immunity and so the benefit to the person that's been infected in the past, if they then get a vaccine, appears to be an additional boost, but there's risk due to pathogenic priming. Whereas somebody that got the vaccine and then they get an infection, that's probably not going to mount as serious an immune response. However, if people get booster vaccines, and it's interesting, isn't it, that Fauci said recently that they're probably not going to be offering boosters as soon as the fall. What we need is public health to grow up. This is my new message. Public health has to grow up and admit that the best thing that can happen to a person that has had the COVID-19 vaccine is to get a different kind of infection to kind of reset the immune system so it's not, you know, super primed to go after anything that looks like a COVID-19 spike protein. Okay. With, you know, the basic immunology tells us that.
Okay. So I think what I'm hearing you say, though, is I've been concerned, but maybe there's not as much worry on that as I thought on that. So I think people maybe take some comfort, I think, because you're so scientific. Sometimes I'm like, so is it okay? Should I be worried about these people that I care about? So it seems to me like you're saying it is okay, right?
What I'm saying is I want to put the facts out there as well as I understand them. And I have a lot of disdain for people that want to rule by fear and influence people's decision-making by fear. So
I agree.
The deal is we're all adults. We know what risk is. We can assess risk. So the best thing that I can do is put the facts out there as well as I understand them. And what I said in layman's terms is that the risk appears to be biased towards people that were injected who might then go get injected again, as opposed to either infected first and then they're injected. And then that third to that would be those that were injected and then infected and then injected. So it's confusing because there's three things there. But imagine, let's put a scenario. Sally had COVID-19. She has residual viral particles in her body, and then she's vaccinated. That's a big risk. You can look up Dr. Fuman Noorkazem, and he has a program called hashtag screen before vaccine. Your body should be clear of the infection, clear of the virus before you vaccinate, because you can have some serious systemic reactions. That's Sally. Now Johnny had the vaccine first, right? And then he's going to go get a booster. Well, all of his immune response is mounted against a single protein. So he may be at higher risk, independent of gender or age or anything like that. He may be at higher risk of having a serious systemic reaction due to a booster. And then you have, let's say, Joe. Well, Joe actually had, the injection first. So the question that you asked, what about these people that had the virus or the vaccine? Sorry. Joe had an infection And then later on, Joe had a vaccination, and then later on got an infection. Yeah. So those three case scenarios, the latter one, the one that you asked about, I'm least worried about, because I think you're just going to get a minor boost for the most part. Now, this is not the same as saying, oh, yes, there's risk, but it's rare. It's relative risk to the three scenarios. And I don't know what the absolute risk is in any of those three scenarios, because the correct science hasn't been done. And I'm sorry to have to report that. And that again reflects on how HHS and the pharmaceutical companies don't take risk seriously.
Okay. Hey, Jack, we are out of time. I really do appreciate that. But I think that I think where you and I are both at on this is informed consent, honest reporting from our agencies, and be very cautious when it's fear and coercion that is being used to get people to do that. So, Jack, Dr. James Lyons-Weiler, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me, Kim. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds great. And our quote for today is from Will Durant. And he said, the only real revolution is in the enlightenment of the mind and the improvement of character. The only real emancipation is individual. And the only real revolutionists are philosophers and saints. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.